This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Radio Energy News. I'm Adam Zavansky. Coming up on today's programme. Today marks the 20th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement in Northern Ireland. Among the guests at a ceremony in Belfast was former US President Bill Clinton.
The genius to me of the Good Friday Accord was that it was about real democracy, not just majority rule, but minority rights, individual rights, the rule of law, and the absence of violence.
The UK National Security Council is set to meet today following last week's alleged chemical weapons attack in Syria. The attack has been condemned by both Theresa May and Donald Trump, with Mr. Trump promising quick and forceful action. Former Prime Minister Tony Blair has said military action is now inevitable.
If you don't respond to the use of chemical weapons against civilians, then obviously we're ignoring what the international community has said, which is that this is unacceptable and those that use such methods should be held to account, and we're giving carte blanche for future use of chemical weapons.
New anti-terrorism barriers are to be erected on the Royal Mile in Edinburgh. They are part of new measures being brought in to improve security in the capital city ahead of the annual Fringe Festival later this year. All this and more in the next half hour. And now, our top story. Today marks the 20th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, a deal which helped bring an end to almost 30 years of sectarian conflict in Northern Ireland. But after 15 months without a Northern Irish ruling executive and Brexit uncertainty, is the agreement under threat? Shoni Maguire has the story.
Bill Clinton and Tony Blair are among those marking the 20th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement in Belfast. The former Prime Minister insists the agreement is still relevant today.
Before then, we had decades. And, you know, you remember, I remember what it was like waking up every morning to tales of death and destruction, terrorism, sectarianism, hatred. And the Good Friday Agreement gave us the chance to put an end to all of that.
The agreement included plans for a Northern Ireland Assembly with a power-sharing executive and new cross-border institutions. It also meant the Republic dropped its constitutional claim to the six counties that form Northern Ireland. It decommissioned paramilitary weapons and led to an early release of paramilitary prisoners. But 20 years on, and with Brexit on the horizon, the Good Friday Agreement has been left in potential danger. Peter Gagan speaks more on how Brexit may have an effect on the original agreement.
The Good Friday Agreement was signed in 1998. Both the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland were in the European Union, so it meant that there was no border manifestations at all really at that stage. Most of them had been phased out a few years earlier. So the argument that people are making is that any change to the border would constitute change to the Good Friday Agreement because it would change the north-south aspect. So lots of people who are pro-Brexit would kind of look at the Good Friday Agreement and do a kind of control F and find the border and find no mention of border and say it isn't an issue.
He also gave his view on how UK politicians are dealing with the implications of Brexit while trying to keep the agreement intact.
It feels as if the Labour Party similarly are not really engaging with the reality of Northern Ireland, the reality of the issues that are posed by the Northern Irish question and aspects of what really, you know, we talk a lot about the Irish border, but really it's the British border. It's Ireland's border and Britain's border. And there's a tendency in Britain to cast it solely as a matter for the Republic of Ireland. And similarly, a similar tendency within the Labour Party.
In the midst of these allegations of carelessness, it was not ideal that senior Labour MP Barry Gardner was forced to apologise this morning after being caught describing the agreement as played up and as a shibboleth. Spectator columnist Alex Massey believes Gardner's comments were more of the Freudian slip variety.
There's an old saying in Washington, D.C., that a gaffe is that moment is committed in that unfortunate moment when a politician accidentally blurts out the truth or says what he or she really means. And I think by that standard, Barry Gardner's comments are a gaffe. Again, there is a portion of the Labour Party that has no interest in Ireland.
The Shadow International Trade Secretary's comments came as questions still remain over the future of the Irish border post-Brexit. Theresa May's government has still not reached a deal, and with the Irish government calling for a firm decision by June, time is running out.
Edinburgh Council officials have revealed plans to install cutting-edge anti-terrorism barriers in time for the annual Edinburgh Fringe Festival in August. This comes soon after a vehicle-related attack in the city of Munster in Germany that left three people dead and at least 20 others injured. Covering this story is reporter Rory Gilmore.
As the Edinburgh Fringe Festival draws ever closer, the city of Edinburgh is beginning to prepare itself for tourists of the world to arrive en masse. The Edinburgh City Council are planning to install modern anti-terrorism barriers in order to prevent vehicle-related attacks, in another attempt to make sure the festival stays as safe as ever. It is understood that it will provide the city with the first bespoke crowd protection system in the United Kingdom. Locations will include the Royal Mile, George Street, The Mound and St Andrew's Square. A local shop owner on the Royal Mile was happy to see the barriers introduced in time for the Fringe, however felt that more could still be done to protect the general public.
I think it's still kind of unprotected in a way, in terms of, I mean, that's fine if there's a big vehicle, but I mean, if there was anybody walking with anything, then it's not going to sort of do anything. I mean, obviously they'd be manned during the festival time, but yeah, no, I think it's still, it'll stop a vehicle, but not necessarily a person, which can still cause as much damage.
The announcement of these blockades comes days after the hit-and-run attack in the German city of Münster, which resulted in 3 deaths, including the perpetrator, and over 20 people injured. We spoke to a couple from Münster on holiday in Edinburgh, and they spoke of how they would prefer these barriers on the street as opposed to armed personnel.
The terrorism thing, it's putting fear in people. The chance that you're actually involved yourself is minute compared to being run over by a bus. It gives a different feeling, but I don't condone it, I don't like it. And the barriers that cars can't kind of get onto places is a good plan, but I don't think safety will be increased by lots of heavy duty weaponry and military or semi-military people around.
However, the couple were sceptical of too much protection around both Edinburgh and Munster, as this would put them off returning home or travelling places such as Edinburgh.
I think we all have to live, and otherwise we will be completely crazy.
Yes.
All the time under some kind of a fear, living under fear.
That's
no living anymore. We have to face... A war has come into our cities.
Despite concerns of a fall in tourism, there is a justification in the implementation of these measures. The attack in Münster, the Bastille attack in Nice, and the Berlin Christmas market attack are 3 examples of many terrorism attacks in recent years which have involved vehicles. The Westminster attack in March of 2017 was a stark wake-up call for the UK, as over 50 people were injured, 5 of them fatally, when a van was driven into a crowd on Westminster Bridge. Following this, new barriers were installed in numerous locations on London Bridge to try and combat incidents like this. There has also been similar attacks in Scotland, as in 2007, a car packed with explosives crashed into Glasgow Airport. Glasgow Airport Security Compliance Officer Kenny Welsh spoke more on the security measures and the details surrounding them.
The best control measure would be to have no vehicles coming into that area. But most airports or any venue, you need to make sure you have. We have to have deliveries, we have to have VIP vehicles, we have to have just normal vehicles that make their living operating in an airport. So you've got to understand what types of vehicles, and then you've got to understand, can you make change? Can you design the roadway to reduce that risk? Where you can't, you need to put in measures. So that's what we did. We carried out a risk assessment. We carried out a risk assessment out with the police.
Certain security measures were taken for last year's Fringe, as yellow barriers were introduced on the Royal Mile, bag searches were introduced in certain areas, and even police sharpshooters were positioned on the roofs of certain buildings. This year's Fringe looks to be similar to last year's in security, but these new measures introduced should hopefully put festival goers' minds at ease.
A report there by Rory Gilmore on the anti-terrorism barriers. The time is now 5:29. An independent publication created by students has gathered a huge increase in popularity. The Broad Online, founded by 2 students at Edinburgh University, responds to the growing concern over censorship of unpopular views on university campuses and provides a platform for students from around the country to express their views and discuss topics that could potentially be considered too controversial for on-campus. John Gillespie reports.
It's been a battle that seems to never end, the issue of free speech on university campuses. The debate between the freedom of students to explore and question their own views against breathing life into harmful views is something that universities have had to consider for years. And recently, many have made steps towards protecting vulnerable students. So-called no-platforming and safe spaces have become a more regular occurrence in our universities, and there has been some recent backlash against this trend. The Broad is a website created by 2 University of Edinburgh students as a platform of free speech for students across the country. Joe Kleeman and Oliver Craftman created their website for students to air their opinions without the fear of being censored. So why do these two students feel like they are being censored by their university? We spoke to Oliver Craftman about his experience.
Safe spaces and no platforming, things that at Edinburgh specifically, like the banning of the sun, you know, they're not big deals, I don't think. I think safe spaces often can be quite helpful for a lot of students. But what they do is they feed into this culture of people being quite worried about what others may think. And I think the biggest issue, I think, that is created on university campuses is self-censorship, where people feel like, you know, they have a valid opinion, but they're worried that they may offend someone. The rule is that if the argument is good, if the quality of the article is good, then it will be published. And we feel like, you know, if something's racist, then that argument isn't going to be good enough to be on our site anyway.
However, students we spoke to at the campus didn't seem to notice an issue of censorship from their experiences.
Don't feel like there's an overwhelming atmosphere of censorship, but I've definitely gotten the sort of winds that it is an issue and a debate with the safe space policy, and people being in support of it and people being quite critical of it.
Comparatively to America, where I'm from, there's a lot less censorship here than there was there. Obviously, a lot of people are able to like partake in protests and say what they want.
I'd say it's pretty liberal, to be honest, particularly down by the library there. There's often quite a liberal displays of what students think, and over by the Hunter building and the art, you know, the art building. Yeah, during the strikes, there was a lot of stuff like written on the walls and chalks and stuff.
Ultimately, the Broad will not put an end to the debate on university campuses around free speech. However, it shows that there is an appetite for inflammatory discussion within the student community.
That was John Gillespie there. It is now 16:34. Coming up, we have all the latest sporting, weather and travel developments. But first, with the latest on today's local stories, here is Sumner Shorey.
Prison sentences under 1 year may be disregarded after Nicola Sturgeon introduced plans to scrap minor crime sentencing. Justice spokesman for the Conservative Party in Scotland, Liam Kerr, has voiced his opinion at the proposed plan as two people who were found guilty of homicide and given a 12-month sentence last year could have been let off under his new law. Figures on criminal proceedings in Scotland show that 35 people found guilty of sexual assault and a further 99 guilty of attempted murder were only given a maximum of 12 months behind bars, meaning people committing these crimes could get away with their crimes. Mr. Kerr hit out the plan, saying that it will let some of the most dangerous criminals off the hook. Tributes are being paid to a 7-year-old boy who died after collapsing at a bus stop in Edinburgh on Saturday. The incident occurred on Constitution Street on Saturday, resulting in the area being cordoned off for 3 hours. The boy, Harris McGurk, was rushed to Sick Kids Hospital in Edinburgh, but died later that evening. McGurk's local school teacher said, "You will be missed in your classroom with all your wee friends." The death is not being treated as suspicious by Police Scotland. Police are on the hunt for a group of people who vandalized at least 16 cars in the capital over the weekend. The gang damaged car windows and windscreens in many areas of the South Edinburgh, such as Morningside, Churchill Drive, and Newington. Morningside Chancellor Nick Cook commented on the incident, saying, "This type of vandalism is completely unacceptable." This attack is similar to 1 week ago that left locals thousands of dollars out of pocket after a gang of people tore through a quiet Polwarth street, vandalizing and stealing items out of cars during the night. A rapist who attacked a young woman in Aberdeen has been jailed for 10 years. Alistair MacDonald attacked his victim, Katie Johnston, in Union Gardens Terrace in January 2016, but has today been sentenced for his crime at the High Court in Edinburgh. MacDonald had admitted to sexual assault, but not rape, even though a forensic physician stated that one of the injuries that the victim suffered was one of the worst she had ever seen. Johnston had urged people in her position to come forward and not feel alone in dealing with sexual assault, as she stated people should be able to walk anywhere in public and not feel threatened. A barber in Edinburgh is offering free haircuts and sandwiches to the homeless as a goodwill gesture in the hope that it can lead to more. Keith Love has started working with local charity Social Bite to arrange Social Cuts program where people sleeping rough in Edinburgh can come and get their haircut, along with tea, coffee and sandwiches to give them temporary warmth and well-being. Love said he had a dream that he was in a Social Bite cafe and a group of homeless people came in wanting their haircut, and ever since he had a good feeling about it. Love said they will be treated like any other client. Hopefully they will leave the salon feeling great.
And that was Sumner Shorey there with the local news bulletins. He will be back just shortly with the national and international news. Now, President Trump has promised quick and forceful action after an alleged chemical attack in Syria on Saturday. Western leaders continue to hold talks in response to the apparent attack by the Assad regime. Our reporter Mary Thomas has more on the story.
After 40 people were killed on Saturday in a suspected chemical attack on Douma, President Donald Trump has promised a forceful response from the U.S. and Syria as Western leaders consider what actions to take.
We're making a decision as to what we do with respect to the horrible attack that was made near Damascus, and it will be met, and it will be met forcefully. When, I will not say, because I don't like talking about timing.
The last rebel-held town in the eastern Ghouta region of Syria was hit, but the exact death toll is still unknown. Activists from the Violations Documentation Center reported two separate incidents of bombs believed to contain toxic substances being dropped by the Syrian Air Force. Prime Minister Theresa May had this to say about the issue.
Yes, this is about the actions, the brutal actions of Assad and his regime, but it's also about the backers of that regime. And, of course, Russia is one of those backers.
The condemnation from Western leaders follows a tense meeting at the UN Security Council in which the US and Russia traded harsh words over the incident. The US suspects Russia's involvement in the alleged attack and has said Russia, a Syrian military backer, has the blood of Syrian children on its hands.
Russia is being unpardonably threatened. The tone with which this is being done has gone beyond the threshold of what is acceptable, even during the Cold War.
Discussions are still ongoing as to whether countries will take military action, but one thing remains certain. The pressure on Donald Trump to strike is higher than ever.
Our reporter Mary Thomas there on the alleged chemical weapons attack in Syria. A body was found in the water of Leith in the early hours of the morning. Police, ambulance and forensics have all been at the scene for the majority of the day. So too was our correspondent, Fergus Robb.
Police tape restricts one of the entrances to Water of Leith walkway today. On this bleak Tuesday morning in Edinburgh, police cars and ambulances were rushed to this very scene at around 7:20 a.m. Forensics pulled the body from the water just off Glenogle Road. Further down the water, police tape also covers the surrounding trees. The body was said to be a male wearing dark clothing, but the age and identity of the individual has yet to be released at this stage. This incident happened just on the border of Stockbridge and Leith, close to the Edinburgh Botanic Garden, but caused no major disruptions in the area today. A police statement was issued this morning in regards to the incident.
Police in Edinburgh responded to Glenogle Road at around 7:20 a.m. on Tuesday, April 10th, following the discovery of a body found within the water of Leith. Officers and other emergency services are currently in attendance to recover the body and inquiries are continuing.
The police are yet to release further details in regards to the ongoing investigation.
And now, Sumner Shorey returns with the latest stories from around the globe.
Yulia Skripal, the poisoned daughter of Russian ex-spy Sergei, has been discharged from Salisbury District Hospital. The 33-year-old was released on Monday and taken to a secure location. Skripal has been in the hospital since March 4th, following exposure to the nerve agent Novichok. The hospital said that her leaving marks a significant milestone, but her treatment is not over. Medical Director Dr. Christine Blanchard spoke on the status of Sergei.
Her father has also made good progress. On Friday, I announced that he was no longer in a critical condition. Although he's recovering more slowly than Yulia, we hope that he too will be able to leave hospital in due course.
Lufthansa has canceled 800 flights today due to worker strikes in Germany. Workers are staging the strike before pay talks are set to occur. According to the trade union Verdi, the strikes are meant to increase pressure on public sector employers ahead of salary talks. Some 90,000 passengers are supposed to be affected by the cancellations at the Frankfurt, Munich, Cologne, and Bremen airports. Lufthansa said normal service should resume on Wednesday. Air France also canceled a quarter of its flights amid staff talking action for wages. Unions representing airline staff are calling for a 6% pay raise, while Air France is offering a 1% increase. Two of Britain's most notorious jihadists say there will be more attacks in Europe. Alexander Koti and El-Shafi El-Sheikh say the West's attitude toward jihadists make Islamic State-inspired attacks inevitable. The two were accused of being members of the ISIL, nicknamed the Beatles, which was led by Jihadi John. Cody and al-Sheikh were captured in Syria earlier this year, but both have recently started speaking out from a detention facility in a Kurdish-controlled region. Al-Sheikh stated that many innocent people may be harmed.
There will be lots of things that will happen. Many more innocent people may be harmed because of this narrow-mindedness.
Kim Jong-un has publicly acknowledged proposed talks with the U.S. for the first time. Mr. Kim mentioned the prospect of a discussion between North Korea and the U.S. at a meeting with government officials. President Trump agreed to talks with Mr. Kim last month. Details of a proposed meeting, including the time and location, remain unclear. On Monday, Mr. Trump said he plans to meet Mr. Kim in May or early June. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg is set to appear before U.S. Congress today and tomorrow to testify about data misuse. In a press conference last week, Mr. Zuckerberg was heavily criticized by journalists as he took responsibility for what he described as a mistake. Mr. Zuckerberg added that the company has already made changes to better protect user data. Theresa May will announce £75 million of research into prostate cancer. The research will recruit 40,000 men into trials for improved diagnosis and treatments for the disease. The disease recently overtook breast cancer as the third biggest cancer killer in the UK, as 11,000 men die each year. Ms. May said many end up losing loved ones from the disease because diagnosis comes too late.
What we want to find is a means of earlier diagnosis. I think this is very important because, of course, the earlier that you diagnose, then the better the treatment can be and the better the prognosis.
That was Prime Minister Theresa May there, and that was a report on the national and international stories from Sumner Shorey. And now, with the latest sporting action, here is Gregor Kerr.
Manchester City host Liverpool in the second leg of their Champions League quarter-final tonight. The Reds lead 3-0 after the first leg at Anfield. Liverpool may welcome back Mo Salah into the team after a minor groin injury. City manager Pep Guardiola has admitted his side will need a perfect performance to reach the semi-finals.
To go through, you have to make almost a perfect game. So create a lot of chances, be clinical when you create the chances, concede few chances. What we show in this year, we did many times, we can in a short time of period create chances.
Great Britain have been drawn at home to Uzbekistan for their Davis Cup playoff to stay in the World Group in 2019. After losing to Spain in February, Team GB will feature in the playoff for the first time since 2014. The ties will be played between the 14th and the 16th of September. Andy Murray and Kyle Edmund both missed the previous tie, but could be available by September. Now to the Gold Coast, where Scotland have picked up medals in shooting and swimming today, taking a total of 28 medals at the Commonwealth Games, with 6 of those being gold. They're on course to better the record away games medal haul of 29, which they achieved in 2002 and 2006, and may also break their medal target of 30. Aaron McRitchie spoke to BBC reporter John Beattie, who is currently out in Queensland covering the games, to get an insight of what it's been like in the sunshine of the Gold Coast.
There's been a buzz about the place. Certainly the Scots, I think they'll be disappointed in the number of gold medals. We haven't won the gold medals that we've had before, therefore we will be further down the table, but you know, you never know. I think Team Scotland put out beforehand that they would win 30 medals. That was their target. But it's apparent, having spoken to some people within the organisation, that they were looking for more like 40 or 41. You and I are talking at the end of day 6 of an 11-day game, so we are just beyond halfway. And you know, if you take away the fact that judo hasn't been in these games, so 13 medals from 2014 have been taken out. Scotland have done pretty well.
So do you think the team morale is still up to get further than those 30 medals that they predicted?
Yeah, because I don't think it was a real prediction. I think they had targets. For instance, you know, we always get shooting medals, and there are medals that sneak up on you. There might be boxing medals. There are still quite a few sports to go. I think that they will be quietly happy. Oh, you know, very, very happy.
And there was more Scottish success to be happy about today, with medals claimed both in the pool and on the shooting range. Surprise star of the Games, swimmer Duncan Scott, took silver in the men's 200 metres individual medley, taking his personal medal tally for this Games to 6. Beattie spoke about the 20-year-old's success.
It's completely slipped under the radar out here. You know, he wasn't even mentioned in any of the 6 major previews in newspapers or television here, and yet he wins his event. He's going to, if he wins another couple, he wins 7 medals. Not been done in the pool since Chad McClough in 2014, Ian Thorpe, I think, 2002. So I think that they will be incredibly happy, and there'll be some very positive noises coming out after these games if the current success rate continues. My standout moment is bumping into Duncan Scott's parents the evening before he won his big race, the 100-meter freestyle, the Blue Riband race. I didn't know them. We bumped into them in the streets. The next minute, I'm in the stand at the outdoor swimming center, knowing that their boy, these parents are in the stand too, watching their boy win. And as a father myself, I think there must be nothing finer than watching your own boy beat people who really thought they were going to beat you.
Erin McRitchie there, speaking to the BBC's John Beattie. And finally, the largest balloon sculpture in the world has been completed and is now on display in the Grand Gallery of the National Museum of Scotland. The sculpture, called Event Horizon, which was designed to replicate a black hole, is being showcased as part of this year's Edinburgh Science Festival. Jason Hackenworth and a team of artists and volunteers worked to complete the sculpture inside the museum over 6 days. Suzanne Oliphant reports.
A sculpture made out of 25,000 balloons seems like something from a child's fantasy or the movie Up, but in fact it's actually here in real life in the National Museum of Scotland. The sculpture itself is made of 25,000 balloons, which are clear, black and red. The rotation of the sculpture creates a vortex effect when standing underneath it. It's attracted a lot of attention, with people taking many different forms of video, photos and even boomerangs on Instagram. Children are quite literally throwing themselves on the ground to look at the sculpture as they look up to be mesmerised by the rotation of the balloons.
I spoke to Ailey Dunnett from Edinburgh Science Fest about what the sculpture is.
So the piece is called Event Horizon being the kind of point of no return for light or anything entering into a black hole. And we want people to be able to stand underneath it, gaze up into the rotating vortex and kind of contemplate their own place in the universe, for them to think about the vastness of the universe and think about where they belong with it.
She also spoke about the public reaction so far.
So it's been fascinating watching people interact with it. I like to kind of stand by the side and just watch people come up and see it. As soon as they walk up the stairs, everybody gazes up at it and they're drawn to it. You see lots of young children run up to it and straight away they lie underneath it and gaze up watching the rotating. So everyone has a different reaction to it, but everyone has some kind of reaction.
Volunteer Hayley Whittingham, who helped build the sculpture, talks about the progress of putting it together.
So the construction process started with the inflation of the balloons. We had machines to do that, so we didn't have to blow them up ourselves, which made it a lot easier. But because the sculpture is on such a large scale and it's going to be up for quite a while, we had to double stuff the balloons, which made them really difficult to tie. So it took us about half an hour to learn to tie our first balloon. That was the main challenge. Once we got into the swing of that, it was all about sort of tying the balloons together. The structure is made in the red balloons, and then we stuffed them with the black and white balloons, which is what gives it the appearance of the black hole.
Hayley went to talk on about what the balloons represented.
Yeah, so it's called Event Horizon, and the Event Horizon is the point in a black hole at which nothing can escape. So the clear balloons represent a streak of light sort of going into the black hole.
To give background of what a black hole is, we spoke to physicist Zari Koshva.
A black hole, as we believe these days, can be the end process, the end stage of many different processes that we find in the universe. It is a very dense and compact object that is so massive that it is able to warp space-time around it. What space-time means in this context is that it's able to basically make a large dent, if you like, into the fabric of the universe, and being so gravitationally strong, pulling everything towards itself, including light, to make it become black, in that sense that you can't see anything being emitted from it.
If you wish to visit Event Horizon, it's certainly not hard to miss. Just look for the giant balloon located in the Grand Gallery of the museum. Better be quick, though, before it deflates on the 22nd of April.
Suzanne Oliphant there. And now, here are the weather updates. We are going to be experiencing light rain and a breeze from the east-northeast, travelling north and west with high pressure and humidity for the rest of today. By this evening, we will see thick clouds, mist and drizzle that will remain throughout tonight. For tomorrow, mist in the morning will break by the afternoon, and that cloudy and breezy weather we saw today will continue, but with very little chance of rain in comparison. That's the weather forecast for now. Well, that is all we have time for now at the Radio Energy News Team. Our next update will be at 6 o'clock.
This is Radio Energy. Edinburgh, Napier, Radio Group. Talk, tunes, tales and talent. From Edinburgh to you.